Welcome to Heartline. I'm Rita Schulte, a licensed therapist in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, and I'm passionate about matters of the heart. I want to check the pulse on your heart by taking a look at some of the cutting-edge issues that are affecting you and the people around you, and have you consider, how in the world is all this mess called life affecting your heart? To help stir things up, we're going to be talking to some of the leading professionals in the Christian counseling and literary industry, as well as hosting discussions with real people who are struggling with real-life issues. If you want to know a little bit about me, check me out at ritaschulte.com. That's S-C-H-U-L-T-E.com, where you can ask questions, find out about my book, listen to other podcasts, or request to be a guest on the show. You can also find me on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC or follow me on Twitter at Heartline Pod. So let's get going on this journey of the heart. Children need love. Parents need respect. But here's the rub. A child who's feeling unloved negatively reacts in a way that feels disrespectful to a parent. And a disrespected parent negatively reacts in a way that feels unloving to the child. This dynamic gives birth to what Dr. Emerson Eggerich calls the family crazy cycle. So how do we break out of it? Dr. Eggerich is here today to share some key principles from his new book, Love and Respect in the Family. He's an internationally known public speaker on the topic of male and female relationships and has spoken to audiences across the spectrum, including NFL owners and coaches, PGA players and their spouses, and the New York Giants. He was also invited by the military brass to speak to the troops in Iraq. Dr. Eggerich developed the Love and Respect Conference, which he presents to live audiences around the country. This dynamic and life-changing conference is impacting the world, resulting in the healing and restoration of countless relationships. Dr. Eggerich, welcome to Heartline.
Thank you, Rita.
Why were you called to write this book, Love and Respect in the Family?
Well, I think every parent's called to figure this out in that sense. So Sarah and I have three adult children at this point. And, you know, over the years, obviously, you know, as all parents, we try to figure this thing out. And I had the privilege on many fronts, though, of pursuing academic study. I have my PhD in family-related studies. I actually did my dissertation on effective fathering. And so I've always had an interest in this area. But I chose to wait to write a book until my children were adults so that they could speak back into the good, the bad, and the ugly. And so for the last 2 years, I've been writing this book on parenting, Love and Respect in the Families you referenced. And my children are the ones who really have had an active part in this. Honestly, there were several times I wanted to quit as we openly engaged the past, as I heard from them things that I'd done that I didn't even know that I'd done, and suddenly realized, whoa, you know, I have no right to write this book. I felt, you know, like a failure, but they were the ones that said, Dad, if you can't give yourself grace, how in the world are you going to expect your readers to receive grace? So they were the ones that not only encouraged me to write it, but then they are the three that are endorsing it. And so we are kind of blown away by their support.
Oh, that's awesome. That's really cool that your adult kids can look back and be honest, be real with you, but I'm sure you guys did a lot of things right along the way as well.
Well, we're proud of them. Jonathan started Love and Respect Counseling. He's a clinical psychologist. Joy is working for Love and Respect, and she's zeroed in on her generation, 18 to 35, the millennials. And David does most of our videotaping for Love and Respect, and so we're very proud of them. And but we want people to know there's no perfect family. There is a perfect game plan. God has revealed specific things to parents about parenting. It isn't just principles that we might pick out of Proverbs here and there that apply, but he has addressed parents. For instance, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, or that's the Ephesians 6 passage. Colossians 3, do not exasperate your children so they lose heart. So we have these revelations, we might say, and this framework, this game plan. And I have looked at this for many, many years. Actually, since Jonathan, who's 37, began to think about it then. But even more so, when I first came to Christ, I looked at what the Bible said about parenting, because my own family of origin, I saw my dad attempt to strangle my mother to death when I was 2.5.
Oh.
And I didn't surface that until after my dad had died and my mom was in her 80s. And I said, Mom, I have a memory. And then I described it. And she said, you were too little to remember that. You were too little. And I said, well, did it happen like I described it? She said, yes. When I was 11, Rita, my dad, I found out, was committing adultery. And so my mom and dad divorced when I was one. My dad had some rage issues. They reconciled and remarried each other, but then they separated for 6 years. Eventually, my mom, dad, and sister all came to Christ. I came to Christ at age 16, and then I went to Wheaton College because Billy Graham had gone there, and that's all I basically knew. But my freshman year, my dad received Christ, my mom received Christ, my sister received Christ, and my brother-in-law, who's a professor, received Christ.
Wow.
And so we changed, but that doesn't mean that these wounds are not there. So I had woundedness from my upbringing, and of course, then I realized the failings as a parent. But, you know, my kids are an example of, hey, you can rebound, there's a game plan, and when you stick to this game plan and don't focus in on the outcomes on the kids, but focus more on our actions and reactions as parents, we create the most loving environment that will best motivate them to choose our faith and values.
Yeah, absolutely. How is this book different than Love and Respect, you know, your bestseller?
It's coincidental. And this is the point that I want to make. You know, people who write books know that sometimes authors get multiple book contracts, and so then there are these spinoffs, you know. Next thing will be Love and Respect for Catching Frogs. You know? And so, you know, but it's serendipitous that it is that way. Love and Respect for Marriage is based on Ephesians 5:33, where a husband is commanded to love and a wife is commanded to respect. And so it was just coincidental that I said, what does God reveal to children and to parents? And I suddenly realized, hey, that one of the Ten Commandments, children, honor your father and mother, Exodus 20:12. Jesus quotes that in Matthew. Paul quotes it in Ephesians 6, honor your father and mother. And I realized children are not commanded to love their mommy and daddy. Now, they just do that, but they don't necessarily show respect when they feel unloved. And then I realized parents are not commanded to honor their children. It doesn't mean they can dishonor them. It just simply means there's no divine imperative. But Titus 2, the older women are to encourage the younger women to love their children. And so what I saw again was this demarcation that when a child feels unloved, that child tends to react in a way that feels disrespectful to the parent. When a parent feels dishonored or disrespected, that parent tends to react in a way that feels unloving to the child, and thus was born the family crazy cycle. Without love, a child reacts without respect. Without respect, the parent reacts without love, and this thing can spin out of control. And we know this experientially. You know, I used to throw temper tantrums when I was little, and I can remember saying, you don't love me, to my mother, and protrude that lower lip. I never said, you don't respect me.
Yeah.
I didn't. And when she used to, you know, correct me, she didn't say, you're unloving. She said, you're not being respectful right now. So both from a expositional standpoint, scripturally and experientially from our life, we all know it kind of plays itself out. And so the question, of course, is how do we stop that family crazy cycle?
Yeah, how do we stop it?
I have no idea, Rita. I just write about these things.
You just write it.
I think there's several things that we unpack in this book, Love and Respect in the Family, and that's where I've spent 40 years thinking about these things. And as I want to reiterate, I wanted to wait to see if, you know, this is something that is viable and doable. And my kids, as I pointed out, wanted me to be transparent, particularly with the millennials, the younger parents. They don't want 8 formulas. They want to know, you know, what works and are you for real? But one of the things we've got to do is, first of all, decode. You know, I picked up a knife when I was about 11, a butcher knife, and told my mom I was going to go kill my dad.
Wow.
And I had no intentions of doing that. It was completely false bravado. I was mad at him for something. My mother was a very strong woman. She had 3 businesses, great personality, great memory, just a humorous. She was just a delight. She was anything but milquetoast, a great athlete, taught swimming, taught acrobatics. She's just an outstanding woman. I'd never seen her freak out, you know, but she freaked out when I picked up that butcher knife and said what I did, and she demanded that I set it down, and she grabbed it, and so on and so forth. But here's the deal. If my dad had seen that, he could have said, you're a very disrespectful, you know, young man. Well, but I was hurting. There was something going on inside of me.
Sure.
And that has to be decoded. We have to decode what's going on. You know, my daughter Joy, when she was like 4, said she was sick, and she wanted me to lie down with her. And so I did. And then she said, give me a hug. And I said, oh, so that's it. You need a little loving. And she said, of course, and you should know that. So we have to decode, is my child reacting in a way that feels disrespectful to me? And I want to say to parents, there's nothing wrong with feeling disrespected. One of the things we've kind of, I think, done to parents is, you're the adult and you ought not to feel that way. Look, God commands children to honor parents because that's a need that we have. The question, of course, is, first of all, should we be feeling disrespected if my child is simply reacting due to the fact that I said or did something earlier that triggered in the child the feeling that I didn't love the child? So in the book, we talk about the importance as adults, and parenting is for adults only. It's crucial that we try to decode what's going on in that child, even though they're offending us at that moment in time. So many times my kids would, quote, offend me, but I tried to decode what's really going on here, and should I take up offense, particularly me, because I'm a strong kind of alpha male type figure, and I could easily get miffed very quickly, particularly the boys, for the way in which they were conducting themselves. So it's not easy necessarily, but it's not that hard either. But the key is to learn how to decode, both in the children, but also decode what's going on in me. Am I feeling disrespected? Is that okay? How do I deal with that? How do I confront the child who is, in fact, defiant without doing so in an unloving way? Because, I mean, look at it. How fair is it if they're being disrespectful and then I turn around and be unloving? I mean, you know, that's the pot calling the kettle black.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think what you're saying about decoding is that, what is your child believing in the moment about what, how they're interpreting your actions? And then what are you believing in the moment as you try to interpret theirs? So decoding means, you know, what am I believing here about my dad? That he's unloving?
Exactly right.
Yeah, absolutely. Because yeah, then our actions follow our beliefs. Yeah. I mean, if I believe something about you, then I'm going to behave in ways that are characteristic, that are congruent with my belief system.
That's right. And all of us adults know this. And so the test is, okay, when I'm irritated, you know, technically I can avoid an avalanche on paper, you know, just avoid this boulder at this moment. But when they all come down the hill at you, it's difficult to sidestep. And we all technically know that we ought to decode or rightly interpret. People are mature enough to know that. We're not stupid people. The real test is, I don't have time for this. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got to get to so-and-so, or the kids are, you know, in the back. So that's the problem with parenting. You can't do it in your spare time. And how do we then, you know, be this adult in relationship to these kids? And it's a process, and we've got to figure out, particularly when we really go off. My dad would go off in rage. Now we're going to close off the spirit of the child. So, you know, we've got to give ourselves some grace for getting upset and so on and so forth. But we've got to know where those lines are. And Paul was saying, do not provoke your children to anger. In other words, there's a line. There is a line. Fathers, do not exasperate your children so they lose heart. There's a line.
Yeah.
There is a line. Paul is clearly saying to us as adults, you've got to know where that line is. And, you know, the children are going to give us a lot of grace on this side of the line. I mean, they don't expect us to be perfect, and we can say, you know, I was wrong, you know, we forgive me. Kids are so forgiving. But when I was little, we had a swimming pool because we taught swimming in at our home. So Dad built this pool, and I apparently irritated him because I wanted to play with him, and he never would play with me. And on a hot day, he would sometimes get in the pool, and when he did, I was all over him. You know, I just wanted to play. And he didn't have a buffer. It was like he would play, and then suddenly he'd just explode. Mm. And this day in the pool, I was all over him. I was probably about 7 or 8. And he just said, stop it. You know, he just got angry. He pushed me under and stood on me. He was 6'3", 250 pounds. And I'm under there thinking he's playing.
Oh, my gosh.
And I could hold my breath for quite a while, so I stayed under 30 seconds or so. I'm just there thinking this is fun. And then I start to get up, and he doesn't let me get up. And then I'm really starting to get up, and he didn't let me get up. And I think I'm going to take a breath of water here, and suddenly he lets me up, and I come up. And I remember feeling, daddies are not supposed to do that to their boys. And I pulled back. I closed off. I withdrew. I can remember that distinct moment of thinking, he ought not to have done that. That's not right. And I closed off. See, there was a line. There was a line.
Yeah, that creates an attachment wound for you.
Well, and, you know, there are so many things that we talk about today in terms of attachment. And I believe that God uses all of our wounds. Ultimately, God has turned me into a wounded healer. And I actually am grateful for these things that have happened. and because it's given me an empathy for people who are hurting. We live in a fallen world, and there isn't anybody who isn't going to, in some ways, be damaged. And because of that, though, where there's sin, grace abounds. But yeah, that is the point I'm trying to make is that all of us as adults then need to know where that line is. And as you point out, you're going to destroy this attachment, the natural bonding that children feel toward their parent. You don't have to buy that attachment. It's going to be there, but you can certainly get rid of it. You can close them off. That's why Paul said, you know, do not exasperate them so they lose heart.
Yes.
When they lose heart, you will lose their heart.
Absolutely. You know, Emerson, I love that you wrote this book because it's obvious that families are in trouble today, Christian families. And this is such an important work that you're doing. The thing that concerns me, it's not even the big things. Like you tell a story in the book about the drunken dad who punched his kid in the face at the baseball game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the things you've just shared. It's also those subtler messages that we give our kids that can also break their hearts and crush their spirits.
Absolutely. In fact, we were very selective. I've only told a handful of stories, which are these more drastic ones, but they do, obviously excite us, and they do cause us to awaken a little bit, your listeners. But yeah, most life is lived day in and day out on much more subtle things. And the book consists of these daily confrontations. And how does God want us to parent His way on a particular day when my child is disregarding me and I'm feeling disrespected? And it's not a major issue. I've just told them to pick it up. You know, I mean, Joy, my daughter used to leave all of her clothes all over the floor in her bedroom. You know, always. I mean, it's just, in one time I was tempted to put pegs in the floor to give the impression everything was hung up.
You know,
but these things bug us. And
yes.
But they're not moral issues. So how do we parent? How do we do this loving thing? How do we do this marathon called parenting? And ultimately, in the end of the book, we deal with the fact that parenting God's way has little to do with the children. In fact, we could say that the children have nothing to do with parenting God's way. And that sounds like heresy. You know, I mean, on the other side, I said I'd have been a great parent had it not been for the kids. There's no question about that. I won't debate anybody on that one. But how do we do this thing that God calls us to do as parents? What's interesting, Paul says, children, obey your parents. He sees children as moral, spiritual beings, and he addresses them. He doesn't say, hey, parents, tell your kids to obey you. In like manner, he says, fathers, do this. In Titus, mothers, do this. That God is commanding me as a father to do some certain things toward my children. And my children really are irrelevant. And this is a huge mistake that we make on the one hand, and yet it should be a real source of encouragement. Because you know what? At the end of the day, I can't control the outcomes in my kids.
Bingo.
When they're tots, I can. I can control them, and I ought to control them from crossing the busy street. But it's going to move from control into counsel as they move into their teens, and then it's going to move into relinquishment. We got to let them go. So ultimately, I cannot control the ultimate choices they make. I can take them to church, but they're going to have to choose, you know, to believe. I can tell them to say thank you for the gift, but I can't coerce them to be grateful. There's a limitation in my parenting, and that's okay. God intended that. So then it begs the question, what is God calling me to do? And in this book, we unpack six things that I saw Scripture saying to parents about parenting. I'm a biblicist. I study the Bible 30 hours a week for nearly 20 years, and then I combine that with my PhD in family studies, and I've taken a hard look at what God has revealed to me as a parent, and these were the things that Sarah and I tried to do. And it's a game plan. And as I said earlier, there's no perfect family, but there is a perfect game plan. And we unpack for parents how to deal with the daily things you're referencing. This day in and day out parenting challenge. It's a pure joy, but it has moments that are absolutely chaotic. And what is God calling me to do as a parent? And here's the beautiful thing. If I parent His way, I will touch His heart. I will please Him. He will reward me for that.
Yeah,
and we need to remind ourselves of something. We all know the story of the prodigal, and we know the story of the prodigal's father. He was full of compassion, waiting for his son to return, and had the fatted calf and the golden ring and all the stuff, and then the older son was angry. So here you have a dad that had an indulgent, sensual, sexual secondborn who splurged his inheritance. He had a firstborn who was self-righteous, angry, and judgmental. And yet Jesus Christ said, This man represents Abba Father. But Rita, we would never have that father stand up in church and give testimony on how to parent. But Jesus Christ said he represents Abba. And there's a word that I need to say to some of your audience who are living in shame as parents, guilt as parents, because they're outcome-based. They're looking at their children who right now are not compliant, and they are personalizing this, saying, we must have been a failure as a parent. Well, maybe you were. Maybe you were like my dad. You closed off your kid's heart. I can't speak to that. But if there is no intrinsic evil, if there is no evidence that you've done anything that's morally wrong, and you're a good-willed parent who has sought to love this child and not take up offense over their disrespect, you need to hear me. You are parenting God's way. You're bringing pleasure to Jesus Christ, and you are viewed as someone who is representing Abba Father. And we need to be reminded of what Jesus was very clear about. He said, there are some children who will turn their parents over to the authorities to be murdered. Jesus never condemned those parents as bad parents. Instead, he's pointing out that children are moral spiritual beings. I mean, think about it. Solomon was the wisest man that's ever lived. And Yahweh appeared to Solomon 2 times. He writes Proverbs, and the refrain we hear is, my son, my son, my son. Rita, one day I asked myself, who was the son of Solomon? Did he have a son? Yeah, It was Rehoboam. And then you go read the story of Rehoboam. Rita, he was a wicked dude.
Right.
He didn't listen to one thing his dad said, and Yahweh appeared to his dad 2 times. And this idea that if you bring up your children in the way of the Lord when they're older, they'll not depart, that's a principle, not a promise, because there's a plethora of scripture about children who curse their parents, who steal from their parents, who are violent with their parents. And even Solomon's son himself did not adhere to the wisdom of his dad.
Well, you just answered my next question in that. I really wanted to hit this point about sometimes the formula we use as parents doesn't work. You know, the bottom drops out. Things don't turn out with the happy ever after endings that we so desire. And basically what you're saying is we can't control outcomes. So yeah, parents need to understand that and realize that. If there's things they need to repent for or ask forgiveness for, they need to do that. But I think what you're saying is, what is God up to in my life as a parent with these kids? He's using them. He's using all the things that they're doing and their behaviors and all of that to conform me to his image and work something out in my life. And that's what we need to focus on. We need to be dependent on the Lord as we walk through this, because we can't control outcomes. Maybe, like you said, when they're little, we can control some things. But as they grow older and the stakes get higher, we can't control what they do. And we have to just lay that at the foot of the cross and surrender our rights to it.
Yeah, and well said. I mean, that's exactly right. And this isn't just a, you know, resignation. Well, I guess we've lost. This is truly something that God will reward. He is going to say to some parents, well done, good and faithful servants, that he rewards the marriage relationship, the parenting relationship, the employer-employee, and the citizen authority. And these are the 4 areas that many of the epistles swing on, from doctrine to application. It is in these areas that God watches, and he is watching our parenting. And we can bring him incredible pleasure, even though our children are not responding. And Rita, I looked at, there are 4 scenarios. There are good parents with good children. There are bad parents with bad children. And you and I would appreciate that's usually the psychological framework. If the child's good, the parents were good. If the child was bad, the parents were bad. But from a biblical standpoint, you see bad parents having good children. Read the story of Josiah. His dad and his grandfather were wicked kings, but Josiah takes over the kingship at age 8, and for all of his life, at age 16, he begins to seek the Lord and reforms Israel, and the guy was a pure, holy follower of Yahweh when he had no family of origin influence that was worthy of emulation. Mm-hmm. He chose to go another way. And of course, we just cited the prodigal and the father of the prodigal. You can be a good father, good parent, and have children who go wrong. The deal is this, and this is important, and this is why earlier you said about the attachment wounds. If we say that bad parents are going to cause bad kids, then every child with a bad parent is predestined to a hopeless, helpless victim state. And I don't believe that, nor do you. We are free to take another way. We can compensate. That isn't to justify a bad parent. It's to say that children are free. On the same side, it's very shaming to parents who really have parented God's way. And I set forth what that looks like in love and respect in the family. But it's sad that we shame them, particularly in the church, because their children are not who they want them to be or other people think that they should be. And so now the parents kind of get defeated by defeat, and they stop parenting God's way. They just give up. They become permissive, or they become angry, and they just come uncorked. And one of the things that I want to encourage parents to do, stay the course. And remember, just because a child's rebelling today doesn't mean they're going to rebel tomorrow.
Yeah, the story's not finished yet.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Well, and Jesus talked about that. He said there was one son, his father said, go do this, and he said no, but later did it. And the other son said he would do it, but didn't. Who did the father's will? And, of course, the audience said the one who did the will after he said he wasn't going to do it. Exactly. And, you know, Jonathan, my oldest, argued with us all the time. No, no, no. But I realized one day he's a man of integrity. And so he wasn't going to do something behind my back. But he irritated me. And sometimes parents miss it.
Yeah.
The person who says no or argues is really the person that may end up changing the world, whereas the secondborn, who is as winsome and personable as can be, yeah, I'll do it, and then doesn't, and then has some wonderful excuse later on why they didn't get it done as they're smiling at you.
Yeah.
And Jesus was saying, who did the Father's will? And sometimes this defiant child is not as defiant as we think. And the compliant child isn't as compliant as we think. And some of us are taking pride in our successes, which aren't there, and we're feeling defeated by our defeats that really are not defeats at all.
The story's still unfolding. And I think sometimes we just put a cap on it and say, oh, you know, I'm a failure. This kid's never going to do this, that, the other. And I think what you're doing is calling parents to not lose heart. Emerson, we're out of time. I just love what you're doing. This is such an important work. How can people get the book or get in touch with you?
Excellent. They can go to loveandrespect.com, loveandrespect.com, LOVEANDRESPECT.com. Or they can get it in any bookstore, Christian bookstore, Barnes & Noble. It's going to be out the first week in November. And I would love for people to get it. There's a place they can contact us. I would love for people to set aside some time and engage this book.
Oh, thank you so much for joining us today. It was great.
Oh, you're wonderful, Rita. Thank you. And have me on again. I love talking
to
you.
Oh, I love it too. God bless, Emerson.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining me today.
So, if
you have a question or comment, or you'd like to be a guest on Heartline, I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me at ritaschulte.com, on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or Twitter at Heartline Pod. And remember, it's your heart. Keep it alive. Check the pulse.